Technicians up there in orbit kept trying to get some answer out of Fuchs, but he refused to speak to them. The messages became demanding, even Truax's captain angrily complaining about Fuchs's silence. The screen began to blur slightly. I squeezed my eyes shut, and when I opened them, everything seemed normal again. But I knew that symptom well enough. It was the first sign that I had missed an enzyme injection. Soon there would be others. Then I heard Fuchs say, "You're not needed here on the bridge. Go to your quarters." I looked up from my screen and saw that he was speaking to Marguerite, who was still standing by the hatch. "You have to do something about Mr. Humphreys," she said, without taking her eyes off him. Fuchs glanced at me, his frown deeper than usual.
"There's nothing that can be done," he said.
"What about a blood transfusion?"
"Transfusion?
If we can't produce the hormone that promotes his red cell production, then perhaps transfusions of whole blood will keep him alive." They were discussing me as if I weren't there, as if I were some experimental animal or a specimen in a laboratory. I felt my face burning, and I knew my cheeks must be flame red. But neither of them was looking at me. Fuchs barked out a rough laugh.
"Do you seriously think any of my crew has a compatible blood type?"
"Perhaps I do," Marguerite said. "Or you."
To my shame, I didn't dare turn around to look at him. I was afraid of him, pure and simple. I expected him to laugh Marguerite's idea to scorn, or to get angry. Instead, I heard nothing but silence. Neither of the other two crew members raised a murmur. For long moments, the only sounds on the bridge were the inescapable background hum of electrical power and the faint beeps from some of the sensor systems. Marguerite broke the lengthening silence.
"I can call Truax for his medical records."
"No," Fuchs snapped. "There will be no communications with Truax or anybody else."
"But why?" she asked. "You're beaming your telemetering signal back to the IAA on Earth. Why not—"
"Every vessel is required to report its status to Geneva," Fuchs interrupted. "But I'm not required to communicate with anyone else, and I'm not going to do it. Nobody's going to get any claim on my prize money. Understand me? Nobody."
"You can't be serious," Marguerite protested.
Fuchs replied, "The ship's computer has complete medical dossiers on all the crew. There's a medical diagnosis system in the sick bay. It may not be state-of-the-art, but it'll do. When Humphreys is finished his watch here on the bridge, you can run him through the medical scanners and determine his blood type, then see if anyone aboard matches it."
Marguerite said, "Thank you, Captain,"
in a tone that was far softer than her previous words. "Now get off the bridge," Fuchs snapped, as if to make up for the small concession he'd just granted her.
As I returned my full attention to the screens before me, I realized that Fuchs had made his concession to Marguerite, not to me. He actually didn't care if I lived or died, but he had a very different attitude toward her.
A full watch on the bridge was 8 hours long, under Fuchs's command. On Hesperus, watches had been the more normal 4 hours, and Deschamps had been lenient about even that, since the ship was so heavily automated. Lucifer carried a crew of 14, I eventually found out. All of them Asians, two-thirds of them men. Only Fuchs's iron discipline kept order among the crew. They did their jobs with a silent efficiency that was almost eerie. There must have been some sexual relationships among them, but I never caught a hint of any. Of course, they were wary about me. I was definitely an outsider among them. I tried to work the full 8-hour shift at the comm console, tried as earnestly as I could. It wasn't just that I was afraid of Fuchs, although I certainly was terrified of his brutality and strength. But there was something more. My own pride. I hated being considered a weakling, a runt. I was determined to show Fuchs and all the rest of those silent, watchful Asians that I could do a man's work. But my body betrayed me. Hardly a full hour into my watch, my vision began to blur again, and no amount of blinking or knuckling my eyes could help. "It's all right," I told myself. "You can still do your job. Stick with it. Hang tough." Futile words. After a while, I grew lightheaded, dizzy. The screen before my blurry eyes began to spin around and around. No matter how I commanded my body to behave, things just got worse. I felt weak and nauseous. I knew that I couldn't get up from my chair if I wanted to. I couldn't breathe, My chest felt as if someone had clamped a vise around it, and I couldn't lift my ribs to get air into my lungs. I gasped like a hooked fish. I swiveled the chair around a little, my vision going gray. The last thing I remember was saying, "Captain, I'm not..." Then I slumped out of the chair and sprawled on the deck. Darkness overwhelmed me. I heard voices from a long, long distance away. They echoed, hollowly, as if coming through a tunnel. And I felt a sudden, sharp, stinging pain on my face. Again. And again. My eyes cracked open slightly.
"See? He's coming out of it."
It was Fuchs leaning over me, slapping me. Quite methodically, he slapped my face, first one cheek, then the other. "Stop it! Stop it!" someone was yelling. Not me. The only sounds I could make were faint groans. I tried to raise my arms to protect myself, but couldn't. Either I was too weak or my arms were strapped down. I couldn't tell which.
"I'm not hurting him," Fuchs said.
"He needs a transfusion right away."
It was Marguerite's voice, concerned, determined.
"You're certain he's not faking?" Fuchs asked.
I was trying to open my eyes all the way, but the effort was too much for me. I let my head turn and try to see Marguerite, but she wasn't within the range of my vision.
"Look at the monitors," she said sharply. "He's dying."
Fuchs exhaled a long, sighing breath from deep in his barrel chest, almost like the warning growl a dog makes just before it attacks.
"All right," he said at last. "Let's get it over with."
They were going to let me die, I thought. They were going to stand over my prostrate body and watch me die. I realized at that moment that no matter how much I philosophized or tried to justify the end of my existence, I did not want to die. Maybe I deserved death. Certainly no one would miss me or grieve over me. Not my father, not Gwyneth or any of my so-called friends. No one. But I did not want to die. With every atom of my being, I wanted to survive, to be strong, to get up and live. Instead, my eyes closed again, and darkness returned to envelop me totally. I must have dreamed. A weird, mixed-up dream it was. Alex was in it, but sometimes he was Rodriguez. Both of them were dead, killed on Venus. "Don't give up," Alex told me with his carefree grin. He tousled my hair. "Don't ever give up." But I was falling, plummeting like a stone through dark, roiling clouds that flashed lightning like the strobe lights at a concert. Rodriguez was beside me in his spacesuit, screaming that last primal scream that I had heard when he died.
"Don't give up," Alex called to me from afar. "He's already given up," my father's disdainful voice answered. "He's got nothing to live for."
"Yes, he does," Alex insisted. "He's got me, and he's got himself. Find me, Van. Find yourself." I woke up. I guessed that I was in the sickbay. I was on a thin mattress atop what seemed more like a narrow table than a bed. Medical monitors beeped and clicked all around me. The metal overhead curved low above my eyes. I felt strong and clear. No blurred vision, no dizziness. I took a deep breath.
"You're awake."
Turning my head, I saw Marguerite standing beside my table. She looked fresh, newly scrubbed. She was wearing a crisp jumpsuit of deep blue that fitted her much better than the shapeless bag she'd been wearing before. "I'm alive," I said. My throat was dry, but otherwise my voice was almost normal.
"Do you think you can sit up?"
I started to nod, but instead I pulled myself up to a sitting position. No hands. "How's that?" I asked, marveling that I felt no giddiness at all.
"Fine," said Marguerite.
She touched the foot of the table with one finger, and the mattress inflated behind me to form a pillow that I could sit back against.
"Would you like something to eat?"
I realized that I felt hungry. Starving, in fact. "Yes, thank you," I said. Her smile beamed at me.
"I'll fix you a tray."
She ducked through the hatch behind her. When I flexed my arms, I saw that a plastic bandage had been sprayed onto my left inner elbow. She must have done a blood transfusion. I looked around. The sick bay was the size of a small closet, crammed with medical sensors. There was no room for a desk or even a chair, only this table.